It's The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Trace Hillis, and today we're diving into one of the most pressing issues facing Washington families right now, housing. Joining me are Senate Republican leader John Braun, Senator Chris Gildon, the Senate Republican lead on budget policy, and Kurt Wilson with Sound Built Homes. Senator Braun, we'll start with you. How high is housing on the Senate Republicans' priority list?
Yeah, housing has been a top issue with Senate Republicans for a number of years. You know, it all goes into the affordability push, you know, whether it's food, gas, housing, childcare, healthcare. It's all unaffordable in Washington and increasingly not just unaffordable, but unavailable when you talk about housing. And we're doing, frankly, the state's doing very little to correct the problem. They've worked hard. The Democratic majority over the last 2 years to do a bunch of housing bills. And there's some good ones in there. I would concede that. But they're all on the margin. They're not really making a difference. And we see that very distinctly in the data. The housing starts are down at all, you know, at a record low. At the same time, there's a, you know, projected about a 300,000 house shortage across the state.
Senator Gildon, as budget lead, you've seen how much the state relies on housing-related revenue. So what's the outlook there?
Yeah, well, again, it's not great, Tracy. We just had our latest economic and revenue forecast a couple of weeks ago, and come to find out, despite the majority party pushing through $9.5 billion in brand-new state taxes and another $3 billion in local and county taxes, our state's already underwater this year, and this budget has only been in effect just a few months. And one of the big reasons that that we're underwater already is because new construction has slowed down. We're not collecting taxes on all of that construction for housing. It's certainly a big part of it. And I firmly believe that policies passed by the legislature over the last few years, especially most recently rent control, is a huge reason that we're seeing a slowdown in new housing starts.
So, Kurt, I mean, there's a demand. We're just not seeing the kind of growth we need. What's standing in the way of building more homes?
Well, you know, there's a number of factors. Some are controllable, some are uncontrollable. You know, start with the uncontrollable. You know, interest rates are a big factor. We're starting to see those decline now, and we're seeing an increased interest in homes as it relates to affordability. We've got a lot of people on the sidelines just that can't afford the homes that they want to purchase. So while there is demand, we have an environment that has caused housing prices to continue to escalate and the cost of actually owning those homes to escalate as it relates to the monthly payment for folks. And so if you start at the bottom where we need the land, right, to build, we've got policies in the state that are not favorable to housing and growth. And, you know, the urban growth boundary and growth management that was enacted over, you know, 30, 40 years ago now, those policies are, we're not seeing the fruits of what those policies were intended for. We are at a point now where we've built out a lot of our available lands that are unconstrained. And simultaneously with that, we've continued to increase the amount of regulation on land, and those more constrained lands are even more constrained because of the regulatory burdens that have been applied and continue to be exacerbated in the development process. Wetland buffers is a perfect example with ecology using a best available science. They are now pushing new buffers out again on local jurisdictions as a best available science, and these local jurisdictions latch onto those, and the from a no growth standpoint, they use that as justification to pass these increased regulations and protections that is arguably not the best available science. We've got wetlands that have been protected for many years and they're still functioning and with smaller buffers. And so I guess my point there is we can continue to regulate and regulate for the sake of regulating, but if we don't really focus on the end result and monitor the effect of those regulations, we find ourselves where we are. Then you pass things, as Senator Gildon mentioned, rent control. I was an owner of single family homes, and I saw this coming and got out as quickly as I could. I was not going to be at the mercy of someone telling me what I could rent a property for when I'm the one at risk with my lenders and making that payment. I started building apartments here recently, and I'm experiencing some effects there, and I've got a sour taste in my mouth, and this will be my last apartment project. I've got lenders who are, I talked to when I was going to do this project, this most recent project, and it was very difficult to actually find financing because lenders are not investing capital in this market because of the risk of what happened in COVID when the governor can just say, you can't collect rent anymore. Those types of actions are huge risks for not only the guarantor of a loan, but also a lender who finds its loan non-performing. And if you look back at 2008, when we had all this non-performing loans on the books with banks, a lot of our community banks were forced out of business as a result of that. So policymakers, you know, aren't in this every day, don't understand the ramifications. And you can go down the list: rent control, land supply, regulatory environment, interest rates. You know, tariffs maybe have a little bit of effect, but that's just ups and downs in kind of market. You know, when we see lumber that has variations, the tariffs aren't that big of a deal as far as I'm concerned. But I would say, you know, the regulatory environment is not friendly and is getting more unfriendly in Washington as time goes on.
Senator Braun, what can the legislature do? I mean, Kurt just had a list there of things that seem like, you know, interest rates, there's nothing the legislature could do about that, but there are a list of problems there that maybe the legislature could tackle in this next session.
Yeah, there's a number of things. I think the first thing the legislature can do without passing anything is simply openly acknowledge that the vast majority of legislators don't have any experience in this industry and fundamentally don't understand what it takes to survive. And therefore, they're making decisions about regulations without really understanding the impact on house building. So two big things, and we've pushed on this for a number of years. I think it would take a while for them to make a difference, but you mentioned about the Growth Management Act. Two things. One is the way we regulate the urban growth area and the difficulty that cities see or perceive. Sometimes they don't, it's not as difficult as they think, but they believe they're going to see a lawsuit from FutureWise that's going to hold them up. So they're super careful. And be very clear, careful turns into time and money when you're trying to develop. It's as simple as that. If it takes a year or 2 years to get to a point where you can build, that you're spending money that whole time, it adds up into the cost of housing. The other really important issue with GMA that I think people, it gets overlooked, is the time frame. It puts every, you know, municipality in the state on a 10-year cycle. Nothing else in our economy deals on a 10-year cycle. So they make a plan. It might be a perfect plan. I don't think so most of the time, but just say it is. If you're going to wait, you know, 10 years before you modify it, it almost certainly is not a 10-year plan. It's probably a good plan. It's probably not a good plan a year or two later. We need to be on a faster cycle, adapt to the market. And then the last thing I would say is, the legislature absolutely can and should get a handle on the efforts by the Department of Ecology. We're seeing this effort with buffers, not just in building, but in timber and other places, where they're using what I would call pseudoscience to justify increased buffers. And again, this is not making our environment better. It's not making habitat better. All it is doing is making it more expensive and making it less possible for builders and other folks in other industries to be successful. And it's not rocket science. If we don't create an environment where they can be successful, they're going to make rational decisions to go other places or do other things. These are very capable people. They have choices. They're going to make rational choices if the legislature doesn't create an environment where it's rational to go build houses.
Senator Gildon, what about rent control? This is something that Kurt mentioned. And Kurt said he's just not going to do it anymore. Are you hearing from other housing providers that are saying that same thing? And what can be done about it?
Yeah, so I guess a couple of things here is this has impacted our state for a number of years. Just the fact that the possibility of rent control could happen in our state, even before the bill passed, there were people who were making economic decisions because capital follows opportunity, right? And if there's less opportunity to build in our state, then they're going to go build in another state where it's more friendly. But I'll tell you that as soon as that rent control bill passed in Washington state, there were a lot of projects that were in the permitting process that a lot of these builders just said, I'm out, I'm done. I'm not going to pursue this project any longer. What can be done? Boy, that's a good question, Tracy. Given the composition of the legislature as it currently is, I'm not sure that we're going to be able to roll that back anytime soon, quite honestly. But I certainly think that I would remove that policy completely, but I just don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, if I can jump in here, Tracy, on that. I just want to emphasize one thing, you know, what can be done. I mean, one thing we did get in the policy is that sunsets after 10 years. That's a long time, but there is a policy, but I don't think they're done. I think that you're going to see an effort to come back and revisit rent control and dial it down from 7% plus CPI down to a smaller number. We have to be alert and prepared to push back on that. And the other encouraging thing, I just saw a poll just in the last week where they polled on rent control, and where earlier in the year there was polling that said rent control was popular. Basically, it's people weren't really thinking through the economics and what it was going to do in real life. That's shifted, and people are starting broadly, people, not legislators, but voters are starting to understand that rent control is going to do them harm. So there may be an opportunity, but I think it's a long pull. The other thing I would say is the signal has been sent. You know, Senator Gildon made a good point, is what, even before the bill was passed, the signal was sent to builders and landlords around the state that they better start acting. It's going to, even if we undid it today, it's going to take a while to rebuild trust.
Well, if I could just jump in again real quick, sure. What happened as soon as that the passing this was imminent, landlords and building owners instantly sent notices out of rent increases. And I've talked to numerous counterparts that weren't even contemplating rental increases. But once that happened, it was like, okay, we got to do it. We got to start this process. And so as soon as that law went into effect, people across the board were paying more that otherwise would not have been as a result of that action. And what we typically see is a 3-5% at most increase to keep up with rising property taxes, all these things that maintenance costs, things that as a building owner, apartments, you have to deal with, right? So to constrain, and you actually force a landlord to go backwards when you have rising costs of operation, but you're unable to recapture those costs. But in this case, we've set a 7%, which is not a normal increase, but everybody went for it that could and pushed the limits right out of the gate just because they're afraid of what's going to come. If it gets limited to 1-2%, well, then that exacerbates this problem even worse, because now lenders are really going to run scared when loans come up for renewal. They're going to look at rent growth and predictions and appraisals and go, hey, we're out. Go find someone else. So, I mean, this is a big deal when you start looking at how loans could be non-performing in these. I mean, my project's only a $10 million loan, but I personally guarantee that my family's on the line. But, you know, people that have $50, $100 million, valued projects, these are big deals. And you start looking at the number of those that are out there, it's not a pretty picture when you start looking at this. And New York is a perfect example, guys. You can see, the vacancies and what happened there when they implemented things, and what happened to the rent values and those building values. That's a supercharged effect over there, but it's reality.
What would a typical rent increase be before this happened? I mean, I know Sir Gildon and Kurt, you both work in this industry. Was this a real problem? How big of a problem was it? I mean, you just said that after this was enacted, rents went up because you felt like people felt like their hands were forced. They had to raise rents. But before that, obviously rents go up. Sometimes they even go down, actually. But you know what? Typically, what was the case before rent control?
5% was a high increase.
Really?
In my mind, 0-3%. Was an average. And we had properties that we wouldn't raise at all for a year or two even. You let the market do what it's going to do, and let the folks taking the risk as the building owners manage that risk, you're letting that free market work with the rentals. But now what we've created is we've raised the cost of housing for folks that can't afford to buy at the lower part of the spectrum. What did you just see the legislature do? Put a whole bunch more money into subsidized housing as a result, because we're growing the need to subsidize as a result of the regulatory decisions we're making. It's counterintuitive to think that you can make housing more costly to make things and think that you're going to make things better and cheaper, because we're staring us right in the face. We're having to subsidize more now as a result of the regulatory decisions that we're making and the policy decisions. So I don't understand why. You don't have to be a business person to see that. You just have to look at the true numbers that are coming out of the legislature and the budget.
Why, Senator Gilden, why do you think there was the need for this legislation then? I mean, if what Curtis saying is true, and there's no reason not to believe him, I mean, why do you think Democrats felt, and you probably talked with them about this issue, why do you think they felt the need to push this rent control issue forward?
Well, I mean, it's the typical, you hear from constituents who say that their rent is too high and they're having trouble making ends meet. And then all of a sudden, legislators feel like they have to do something, right? We've got to do something. And the easiest thing for them to do is say, well, we're just going to limit the amount that rents can go up every year, because those, you know, fat cat housing providers, they can absorb the costs. But what they didn't think about is all of the repercussions that we're talking about how, you know, if a housing provider like me, I have just a little duplex that I rent, but if I'm not able to recoup those operating costs, the first thing that's going to go away is the quality of maintenance that I'm able to do on that particular house. And over time, that eats away at your ability to do maintenance, and the tenant ends up living in a subpar home, which is what we've seen all across areas where rent control has been implemented over time.
Kurt mentioned this. There's a big demand for home ownership too. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who want to buy a home. They just either they can't afford it for whatever reason, or there just may not be homes available. Senator Braun, how does the legislature get after that?
It's no magic here. It's just math, right? And people, you know, Kurt mentioned people on the sidelines. They want to buy a home. They just can't afford it. You got to either, improve the economy, improve their earnings so they can afford higher, which that's always a goal, but it's a pretty hard long-term goal, right? Or you got to reduce the cost of housing, or at least hold it so they can catch up. And that's the challenge, is we keep adding more and more. We, the legislature, driven by the majority Democrats, keep adding more and more costs and more risk. I want to highlight one thing that seems to be entirely lost on the Democratic majority. You know, Kurt mentioned he's got to personally guarantee a $10 million loan to build a project. How many people have ever done that and understand the anxiety or the risk that goes with that? You're putting your family, your home, your entire life on the line to try to build a project. And yes, it's a business and hopefully you'll make money at it, but that's still an enormous amount of risk. And they don't really appreciate just what that risk means or could mean to somebody that does it. And the idea that they're going to then, you know, try to make it so they can't make any money or even lose money at it. Normal people, rational people, will make different choices. They just won't do it again. And that seems to be entirely lost on the Democratic majorities. They just don't get what they're doing. The other thing, I want to weigh in a little bit on the question you had for Senator Gilden on why are the Democrats pushing it? I mean, I would admit one thing. It is a real problem. Rents have gone up, especially in the places they represent, in recent years, it's actually flattened a little bit. But over the last 5 or 10 years, rents have gone up. People are truly having a trouble affording it. What they don't seem to get is the problem is one they created. And making it worse is not going to fix the problem. They made it expensive to build. They made it expensive to live in central Puget Sound in particular. And then when people complained it's too expensive, they thought, well, we'll just artificially limit it with statutory power. You know, every economist in the world will tell you that does not work. So we have a real, you know, access to housing or a real issue with rent is absolutely true. But the fix is the market. And this isn't like make-believe. We've seen it work. You know, go and look at the housing, the house building in Austin, Texas. You know, no right-wing capital by in Austin, Texas, but not Austin, Texas is pretty Democratic. And yet they're building and their prices for rent is coming down. Here, one of the neighborhoods I represent down in Centralia, we had a ton of building in the last 2 years and rents really not only stabilized, they came down for a little bit last year. That so even in a microcosm in our state where they are building for whatever reason, the market will work if we allow it, you know, if we set it free and stop trying to hold it back with statutory restrictions.
One thing Senator Braun mentioned were costs, and I was just wondering how much your costs have gone up. Now, the two senators here can't do anything about tariffs, obviously, but, you know, costs related to state, you know, from state government. How big of an impact has that been on your business?
Well, the regulatory scheme has costs associated with it, right? So it's hard to answer that question because there's fees that are one thing, but then there's tax elements to it. You know, excise taxes continued to raise. We've got now a tiered approach that goes all the way up to what, 3.5% when you're transacting. So every time a piece of land is purchased and sold, there's a 3.5%. So this compounding effect as you subdivide land and do things, there's just a ton of revenue that's been created through the REIT program. But the legislature spends it as fast as they adopt these things and on these you know, pet projects, and subsidies and all the stuff that they want to do. But we're out of control with our spending, and yet as a builder and a business person, we have to control our cost. We have to budget. We can't look at the future and say, oh, next year we think we're going to have X amount of income. So we're going to project a 25%, you know, growth. And so if without having the capital to deploy to gamble, we can't make those things. We can't do that. The legislature can say, well, we're being told that we're going to have a growth of revenue. So if all things look equal from last year, we can add another 5% or 7% and go, you know, go spend it. Well, that's based on projections, and the money's not in the bank to backstop that, then you find yourself in a deficit. So deficit spending is, or deficit gambling is, I just don't get it. Why we can't focus on, well, here's where we were last year, not taking these extreme gambles on what the projections are going to go, because every year the revenue coming in should increase based on the property tax and the real estate, all things being equal. But we are heavily reliant on construction, but yet we penalize construction with the regulatory burdens and fee structures. And the answer is simple, I'll tell you, and I've been saying it for years: supply. Well, what's the answer to supply? Zoning. The legislature has done some good stuff and passed some great legislation for the housing elements, infill development, all the things that we're trying to do to help get new additional housing, new housing types, infill development. Great. But now what we have is the backlash from government saying, oh, yeah, this is great, but the government or the state's pushing this stuff on us. We can't respond quick enough. And they're complaining, but they're doing it because they're unfunded mandates. But then they go and they pass things like mitigation fees for housing. So in Redmond, for instance, you spend up to, I think the last word I heard was like $70,000 a door if you want to do infill development and get your 4 units per lot, like the legislature, you know, passed for these new regulations for infill development. So now we have to go back and argue and try to convince the legislature to make it illegal for local jurisdictions to tax us to provide the very housing that we're trying to do at a lower cost. It's so counterintuitive. And I know it's taking away local controls, but we've been arguing all along to the legislature as an industry that you're at some point, you got to step over the line and pull these local controls back, because left to their own devices, we are where we are. And it's gotten so much worse. Pierce County's just adopted their comp plan and it's regressed dramatically. I've actually made a claim that I don't know that I'll buy another piece of property in Pierce County to develop single family housing, because of the regulatory changes and the input that now a bureaucrat has in how my project's going to look, feel, and the type of product that they're going to tell me I have to build. That's not what the market wants. And so I can't build it, and I'm not going to do it.
So, senators, that's kind of a hot potato, this local control issue. And this isn't, there's kind of bipartisan agreement and disagreement on that issue, actually. What can the legislature do to, because that's a real issue. I mean, if local jurisdictions are charging extra fees when a developer like Curt is trying to do exactly what the legislature intended, what do you do?
I think this is a fight that's going to continue. Yeah, I supported the middle housing bill. I supported the lot splitting bill. I think they're a step in the right direction. I think we had not every municipality, but some municipalities are really being difficult. We didn't have the option to, you know, for new greenfield development, we need to increase density. It's not the only, it's not going to fix the whole problem, but it's part of the solution. And I think we're going to have to weigh in with municipalities that are throwing up more roadblocks. It's going to be, I think, even trickier than the original bills, because in some cases, they're just being difficult and they're trying to stop development, and we should go after them. In some cases, to Kirk's point, they're trying to find a way to fund a new program that the state said go do, and we didn't give them any money to do it. So it's a mixed bag. But in the end, if we're going to be successful in Washington, it's all options, right? We're going to have to pursue a more density. That means we got to push back on the, a combination of pushback and help the municipalities implement this thing. And we're going to have to get more new space available. One of the things, even if this went perfectly, even if the legislature got it perfectly right with more density, even if the cities and the municipalities implemented without more fees, it's still more expensive. It's still more expensive than the new, given the cities more options with bringing land into the UGA and developing it over time. We can't say, oh, we did density, it's all done here, it's the problem's fixed, because it's not. It's a slice, and we got to keep working to refine it, but it's only one slice of the problem.
Senator Gildon, builders like Curt have to, pay taxes too. I mean, just on everything. What about taxes? I keep on hearing this talk that they're going to go up again to deal with this budget deficit. I mean, the budget deficit's serious. What are you hearing, and what can, I guess, people do? I mean, because there's only so much you can do when you're in the minority, like the both of you are, both Republicans, and there's a Democrat majority in the legislature. But, what's your message to people, I guess, about the potential for new taxes?
My message overall is that it didn't have to be this way, right? Whenever we first heard about this budget shortfall a year ago, right about just after the election last November, we started hearing about a $4 billion budget shortfall. And then that quickly jumped up to 8, 12, 16. At one point, they said it was a $21 billion shortfall, which tells me that they were really just trying to figure out what they wanted to spend and what projects that they wanted to fund, and they're calling it a shortfall because they didn't have the money to fund what they wanted to fund. But anyway, we reached out to the nonpartisan staff and we asked them, what is the actual shortfall? What's it going to take to operate government next year in the same way that we're operating it right now? And they said it was $6.5 billion. And so at that point, I got with some of my colleagues and staff, and we went through an exercise to determine if we could actually provide a balanced budget that didn't have any cuts to services or any tax increases. And in the end, we were able to do it. We were successful at doing that. We called it the Save Washington budget. You could look it up online if you wanted. And we offered that twice on the floor of the Senate, and the majority party voted against it both times in favor of what I consider solely a policy choice to enact $9.5 billion of brand new taxes. So it was totally a policy choice. We offered a solid proof of concept that no taxes were necessary, and they just chose to go a different direction.
What about the future? What about the supplemental budget? I mean, do you think there's a way to balance that without new taxes?
Well, we're looking at about $412 million in the hole right now, which doesn't quite tell the whole story, because there's a couple of other things that the state is going to owe, like $500 million in tort liability. that's not included in that number. I'm hearing that they are considering a type of a wealth tax to tax certain income personnel at about 9% for the wealth that they've accrued. We'll see if they actually are going to push through with that. For my part, I'm going to go through the exercise again, and I have staff already working on it, to see if we can take sensible reforms that we spoke about previously in the Save Washington budget, overlay it onto the current budget, and we're going to see where we lie and try to provide another alternative. But I think it would be a very bad look for the majority party if the Republicans were somehow able to balance budget both years without cutting services or increasing taxes, and they chose to jack taxes up both of those years.
And Kurt, bottom line is that, you know, someone has to pay these extra costs. It's either going to be you out of your pocket, or it's going to be the people who are buying and renting your homes, right? I mean, it's, we talked a little bit about basic economics here, supply, demand, but costs are the same way. They get passed on generally, right?
Every dollar gets passed on, contrary to popular belief, and all the taxes that we pay, from B&O to real estate excise tax to property tax to sales tax to income tax, we pay them all, right? And so you add all these layers on and they all continue to rise. Yes, it has to get passed on. And so the other concept that is, it doesn't really seem to be grasped by those that on the other side, is we have to have a business that looks and feels and actually performs. It's different than a grocery store selling a gallon of milk or a dozen eggs and a margin on those products, right? We're selling something that takes a risk to get to a point where you actually have something to sell. And then there's a market influence that, if the market's not there to, you know, 6 months or 9 months later, once you get the house ready to sell, then we're paying in debt service on that until it does sell. And so we're managing inventories. I mean, all these things come into play. And yet we work on such slim margins compared to most other businesses, but they're bigger numbers because we're talking tens and hundreds of millions of dollars of investment. So everybody looks as builders and as like these, you know, these infinite amount of money. We can just tax the heck out of them and they're going to have the money to pay. Well, we don't do projects that don't make sense and have a return that our lenders are satisfied with, because it's a risk for them. Should the state do something, or should the market turn and cause an inability for that project to perform, they take it back. They're trying to mitigate what that downside look is for them. And if we don't have a margin in there of error, which is our profit, then that underwriting doesn't work. And the OCC and the FDIC that regulates banks looks at it and goes, what the heck are you doing? Not only do you not have a good investment here in this particular loan, we don't care what your guarantor's financial abilities are. You're doing bad business. And that's what we saw happen in the downturn in 08. Banks were lending on projects just because money was flush and it was going out, financing 100%. And they lost big money because the way that they were doing loans back then. So in any event, the taxes are a huge problem, and continuing to rise is a bad thing for industry. And we've already seen Boeing, you know, they took part of their operation out of here. We've got a lot of diverse economy here with, you know, biotech, high tech, aerospace, military, all these folks, which is great. But the ones that have a decision, that are the, you know, the Microsofts, the Boeings of the world, the Amazons, the Googles, these guys can pick up and move. And they take home buyers with them, and they take, you know, folks that are helping make this economy run with them. And so we're really building a bad rap nationwide in Washington State, because we're the poster child for how not to do it across the board.
That's Kurt Wilson with Sound Build Homes. A big thank you to him for being with us. I'm Tracy Ellis for Senator John Braun and Senator Chris Gildon. Thank you very much for joining us. This is The Elephant in the Dome, the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus's official podcast. Have a great day.